Sunday evening, finished up a review of the book of Malachi. And after doing that, I thought, well, why don't I just continue on Sunday evening summarizing some books of the Bible. So as you see in your notes, we're going to look at the book of Ruth this evening. I'm going to take somewhat of a different approach than usual. Now I'm going to read that book. We can read it together. But first, take a look at your notes, and just by way of introduction, but think about events in your life or decisions or choices made that brought you to where you are today. Sometimes I think back, how did I end up here in Imperial Beach, having been born in Muskegon, Michigan? What are some of the events or the choices, decisions that led me here? So I think back. The congregation I grew up in was one of the largest on the western side of the state. Had a large youth group, a couple dozen, even as teenagers around the same age. And many times us Christian young men, we would lead periodically in the evening worship assembly. All the men would take all the leadership places. We also had, back then in Muskegon, Michigan, 6 months during the summertime, we had about six congregations in the area that would have once a month youth rallies. We'd meet on Sunday evenings, and then those who came from different other cities would stay the night. We'd attend Sunday morning worship assembly, then those that came would go home. And so they came from Battle Creek and Kalamazoo and a couple congregations in Grand Rapids and Shelby and Muskegon. So, but in doing that, in leading in worship, Tom Smith and I, we typically were the two that exchanged the parts of doing the teaching or leading the devotional or presenting the sermon. I thought, wow. I thought, well, we'll just do that. I didn't know where that was going to lead. One of those youth rallies, they had a recruiter from Michigan Christian, at that time was called Junior College, came to one of the meetings. He asked where we're going. Came to my time. I said, well, I'm going to community college. I'm going to work for Meijer Supermarkets. I've always done that for a couple of years now. He said, when do I come to Michigan Christian? I said, well, talk to my parents. So I ended up at Michigan Christian Junior College. They had a speakers bureau. They were rather new. And so a couple of guys, myself included, were hired by the college to speak for the college. And then we would go out every Sunday or every couple of Sundays to the churches in Detroit area and present a lesson about education or Michigan Christian College in the Bible class or afterwards. And then it came time to finish, where am I going to go next? I thought I'd go to Abilene, but I was leading singing for a preacher from Harding University, Jerry Jones. He's holding a gospel meeting in the area, and I was leading singing. He said, where are you going to go to college? I said, I think I'll go to Abilene. He said, why don't you go to Harding? I said, okay. Talk to my parents. didn't matter to me where I went. I didn't know anybody at Abilene, didn't know anybody at Harding. I just said, okay, I'll go. So we got into that. So then I got involved with the Timothy Club. And so they would send out preachers into smaller congregations all throughout Arkansas and preach every Sunday. It was either, they got paid for it. So it was either that or work in the cafeteria, and I didn't want to do that.
Oh.
You know, for $1.49 an hour or something like that. So I did that. Then it came back, so I graduated. Going to go back to Meijer Supermarkets. I thought that'll be my career. And my relatives in Blythe, California said, come visit, because they would always make a trip to Muskegon every summer. And all right, I'll come out and visit you. And just so happened, about 2 weeks after that, their preacher, he already made arrangements to leave Blythe and go someplace else to preach. And so I said, well, I'm here. I'll preach for you. And so I did that for almost a year, and they finally decided they wanted a family man. I was 22 years old and single, happy.
I'm telling you.
But they found a congregation over in Morro Bay, California. The word got out this way, that way, and coincidence, providence. So I went to Morro Bay and started preaching, and just so happened that's where Christine's grandparents worshiped. So Christine graduated from San Francisco State and was coming down to Disneyland with her sister and a girlfriend, stopped by Morro Bay. I saw her and she saw me. She ran slow enough for me to catch her, I guess. find somebody. And so I did, and so here we am, 35 years later.
So we have Dennis. So we have Dennis to blame for you being here.
Yeah, Dennis and Jeff to blame, at least partially for me. So in your notes, I do it. So you wonder, how did Ruth end up where she did? And you can think about your own story, about what your decision, the events that took place that brought you here. But in the word providence, according to Vine's Expository Dictionary of New Testament Words, he just says something prepared or supplied for the future. This word has provided. There wasn't a lengthy definition at all for the word providence in that. But we recognize a couple of Old Testament stories. Genesis 50, you know, Joseph in meeting with his brothers, you meant it for evil by selling me and turning me, you know, not appreciating me, but God meant it for good. And look at how the events turned out. Joseph, how'd you get to where you were, my brother sold me. The story of Esther, you know, Queen in the Esther chapter 1, Queen Vashti didn't obey the king's command, so he banished her. A beauty contest was held, and Mordecai put Esther into it, and she won, became queen. Then it'll come back later, a little bit later, then we find that Haman wants to kill all the Jews, and Mordecai finds out about it. Esther goes before the king. The king doesn't just take visitors, even if you're the queen. But she goes in. The king raises his scepter, meaning it's okay to come in. She saves her people. Romans 8:28, we know that all things work together for good to those who love God. So sometimes the decisions we make, the choices or the events that happen in our lives that take us one direction or another, they can turn out for good. So that's the story of Ruth. She's transformed from poverty to wealth, widow to being a wife, and barren to fertile, and a foreigner to Israelite. In these four chapters of Ruth, you're going to find out several things. A lot of things are just Old Testament customs. And I put those in your notes. You'll see several other references in Exodus and Leviticus that talk about Old Testament customs that really help shape Ruth's destiny. In chapter 1, there's the Old Testament law that God cares for strangers when they came through the land. In chapter 2, it says God, or the story in Leviticus of the law, God cares for the poor. And that came to Ruth's advantage. In chapter 3, God cares for widows. In chapter 4, God cares for his lineage. Ruth, how did you get to be in the lineage of David and Jesus? Oh, providence. So you can read the notes and go through there. I was going to just kind of summarize the book, but I want to read the book of Ruth to you. It takes 12 minutes. Came out the auditorium and timed myself the other morning. So if you want to follow along, I'll be reading from the New King James Version, the same one you have in the pews. So the book of Ruth, like I said, you'd have the notes in your hand. Came to pass in the days when the judges ruled. Well, there was a famine in the land. Certain men of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Oh, by the way, the Moabites are descendants of Lot. So there's a tie in with the Israelites with that. Verse 2. The name of the man was Elimelech. The name of his wife, Naomi. The names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. Epaphrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. They went to the country of Moab and remained there. So Naomi and her two sons. Verse 3, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. She was left and her two sons. Now they took wives of the women of Moab. Name of one was Orpah. Name of the other, Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. Both Mahlon and Chilion also died. So the woman survived her two sons and her husband. Verse 6, she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard that in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. Therefore she went out from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her. They went on the way to return to the land of Judah. Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each to her mother's house." In other words, go back to Moab. That's what the two sons, when they went to Moab, they married Moabite ladies. So they all died. Ruth says, go back home. It says in verse 8, the Lord deal kindly with you, as you've dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband. So she kissed them, they lifted up their voices, and wept. They said to her, surely we'll go with you to your people. Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go. I'm too old to have a husband. I should say I have hope. If I should have a husband tonight and should also bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters. It grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. They lifted up their voices and wept again. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. She said, look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people, to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. Well, but Ruth said, treat me not to leave you or turn back from following after you. Familiar verses. For where you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people. She's going to take on the Israelite faith. That's important to know the story. And your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you and me. So she makes a vow. Verse 18. She saw that she was determined to go with her. She stopped speaking to her. Two of them went until it happened. When they came to Bethlehem, all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? She said to them, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full. The Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty afflicted me? So Ruth is kind of bitter. But God didn't cause her bitterness. That was Ruth's choice. God just allowed all these events to happen to her. She made the choice to go and to come back. Those are choices we make, Providence. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her. Verse 22. Who returned from the country of Moab, came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Coincidence? Came back at the beginning of the barley harvest? Keep reading. See God's hand in some more. Chapter 2, verse 1. There was a relative of Naomi's husband, man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. Really? Fate? Coincidence? Happenstance? Ruth, that you're going to go and choose a field and it just happens to be a relative of your deceased father-in-law? Wow. Verse 2. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I may find favor. She said to her, go, my daughter. So then she left, went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. Remember, that was the Old Testament law. That's in your notes. You know, leave the corners of the field. Don't pick up the grapes that fall to the ground. Don't harvest the field twice. So there were laws of reaping. Happenstance again? Coincidence? So, verse 3. She happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. Oh, yeah. Just happenstance. Who was of the family of Elimelech. So now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless you. Then Boaz said to his servants who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? Oh, an interest in Ruth. There were other ladies gleaning the fields too. Why the interest in Ruth? Providence? So, in verse 6, chapter 2, the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, It's the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She says, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and has continued from morning till now, though she rested a little in the house. Then Boaz said to Ruth, you will listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not go to glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them, follow them in reaping. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn. Wow, so Ruth. Look what Boaz has done. Providence. God's hand in it. You just happen to be at his part of the field. Boaz takes a liking to you. He tells the young men to stay away, keep you safe. Verse 10, she falls down on her face, bows down to the ground and said, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? Triumph of Moab. Here's the reason of verse 11. Boaz answered and said to her, it's been fully reported to me. All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband and how you have left your father, your mother, and the land of your birth, you've come to a people whom you did not know before. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. Ooh, a little lesson there. Foreigners can come to God for refuge. Verse 13. Then she said, let me find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you've comforted me, spoken kindly to your maidservant, even though I'm not like one of your maidservants. And Boaz said to her at mealtime, come here, eat of the bread, dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers. He passed parched grain to her. She ate and was satisfied and kept some back. And when she rose up to glean, verse 15, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves. Do not reproach her. Providence again. Let grain from the bundles fall purposely for her. Leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening, beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. Verse 18. Then she took it up, went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, so she brought out and gave to her what she kept back after she had been satisfied. Mother-in-law said to her, where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, blessed be he of the Lord, who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead. Naomi said to her, this man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives. Verse 21. So Ruth, the Moabite, said, he also said to me, stay close by my young men until they finished all my harvest. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it's good, my daughter, that you go out with this young, with these young women, and that people do not meet you in any other field. So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley seeds, barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. Interesting how things happen, choices we make, events that take place that bring you to certain situations. Chapter 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? So Naomi has an interest in the security or the safety or the future of her daughter-in-law, Ruth. Verse 2. Now Boaz, whose young women you were with. Is he not our relative? In fact, he's winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Go, therefore, wash yourself, anoint yourself, put on your best garment, go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he's finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies, and go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do. Ooh, kind of brazen. But that was another custom of the Old Testament era. Kind of brazen to just kind of go in, and kind of like Esther going into the king, putting your life in your hands. But she, by the encouragement of Naomi, she goes in and puts at the feet of Boaz, puts the cover over her, which was a sign or a petition, a visual petition. Will you protect me? Will you take me under your wing? Some include that as being a marriage proposal. Verse 5. She said to her, all that you say to me, I will do. She went down to the threshing floor, did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her. After Boaz had eaten and drunk, his heart was cheerful. He went to lie down at the end of the grain of heat or the heap of grain. She came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Now it happened, verse 8, at midnight, the man was startled, Boaz was, turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet. He said, who are you? She answered, I'm Ruth, your maidservant. And here's the request. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative. And that's in your notes too, in Deuteronomy 25. I think chapter 4, I made reference to that note. In the Old Testament time, if a woman's husband died, the brother in the family had to take that woman to wife and rear children. That was law. Okay? And you can read that in Deuteronomy chapter 25. So she's making a petition. You know, I don't have a husband. And she was very brazen. Goes in, will you cover me, meaning protect me? So verse 10. So then he said, blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter. Then he repeats what he knows about her. You have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether rich or poor. So Ruth kept her purity, her status, you know, a good worker. And Boaz, remember, knew about her family, the death of the family, and coming to a strange land, taking on the Israelite God. So Boaz is well aware of that, so he's dealing kindly to her. So verse 11. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request. For all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. Now, it is true that I am a close relative. Here's the Old Testament custom. However, there is a relative closer than I. So, verse 13, stay the night. In the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative to you, good. In other words, if he will take you to wife and raise children. That's good. But, you know, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you as the Lord lives. So there's the vow. Lie down till morning. So, verse 14, she lay down at his feet until morning. She arose before one could recognize another. Then he said, do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. And he said, Boaz, bring the shawl that is on you and hold it. She held it. He measured 6 ephahs of barley, laid it on her. Then she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, is that you, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done for her. She said, these 6 ephahs of barley he gave me.
For he said to me, do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law. And she said, sit still, my daughter, till you know how the matter will turn out. For the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day. In other words, the matter of the duty, of the kinsman-redeemer relationship. He has to redeem her in that situation. But the other kinsman has first rights. Okay. So chapter 4. Now, Boaz went up to the gate and sat down. The gate, I put in your notes, that's where they hold legal business, kind of like the courts. So behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, come aside, friend. Sit down here. So he came aside and sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city, said, sit down here. So they sat down. Well, we have a meeting. We have court in session. Well, verse 3. Then he said to the close relative, Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me, that I may know. For there's no one but you to redeem it, and I'm next after you. He said, I will redeem it. Well, then Boaz said, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance. In other words, you have to marry Ruth and have children. Verse 6, the close relative said, I can't redeem it myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. So you redeem my right of redemption for yourself, because I can't do it. So it's become a legal matter in the Old Testament law about the rights of redemption in buying property from deceased relatives. So verse 7. Now, this was a custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. All right, so here's the custom. To confirm anything, one man took off his sandal and gave it to the other. And this was a confirmation in Israel. I imagine there's a whole shoe store by that gate. Every transaction had to have one sandal given up. Take it to another. But that was the act of confirmation, by the way, and that phrase is found in Deuteronomy 25 and the following verses 5 through 10. The giving of the sandals, Old Testament law. Just so you'll know. So verse 8. Therefore the close relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. So he took off his sandal. Boaz said to the elders and all the people, you are witnesses this day that I bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth, the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have acquired as my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from his position at the gate. You are witnesses this day. So the matter is now settled. Boaz buys the inheritance and takes Ruth for the wife, and they will have children together to perpetuate the inheritance. Verse 11. All the people who were at the gate, the elders said, we're witnesses. The Lord make the woman who is coming to your house like Rachel and Leah, the two who built the house of Israel, and you may prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. May your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this young woman. The house of Judah, or the house of Perez in verse 12, that Tamar bore to Judah, that's a whole chapter story. Genesis 28, somewhere back in there. Look up Judah and Tamar if you want to. But it's a rather long story. But Judah was one of the tribes that have more children than the others. So when Ruth and Boaz come along, their generations are going to have lots of people. So, verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, she became his wife. And when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception. She bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a close relative. And may his name be famous in Israel. And may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has borne him." Then Naomi took the child, laid him on her bosom, became a nurse to him. Reason why Boaz did not marry Naomi was because of her age. Naomi probably sold the land because she needed the money. But Naomi, because of that, so he takes Ruth and he buys the land, redeems the land from Naomi, from Ruth, and that's how the redemption took place. So verse 17, and a neighbor, also the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, "There's a son born to Naomi." And they called his name Obed, the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now this is the genealogy of Perez. Perez begot Hezron. Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Abinadab. Abinadab begot Nashon. Nashon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz. Boaz begot Obed. Obed begot Jesse. And Jesse begot David. So there you go. So Ruth, how did you get in the line of the Messiah? It's interesting. When Matthew's account, there's about five women that are listed in the genealogy of Jesus. I don't know if I remembered all of them. There's Tamar, obviously, that's in this text. Obviously, Ruth, Rahab. I can't remember the other two now. No, well, Mary. And there's one more, Shelah, I think. All right, so that's the story of Ruth. We said sometimes I could read it. So now if anybody ever asks you, "Have you read every verse in the book of Ruth?" You can say, "Yes, I've read every verse." All right. Again, the purpose of the lesson with just doing this was I want you to see God's hand in your life and mine, and look back at events that took place in your life, decisions you've made, choices that brought you where you are today. I've always, what would happen if I'd have stayed in Muskegon, Michigan? It would have blessed me there. Always at the close of a lesson, we sing a song of encouragement, a song of invitation. And by the way, I don't know what the next book of the Bible is. I haven't determined that yet. It'll be one of the short ones, obviously. But always at the close of a lesson, we sing a song of encouragement, a song of invitation. If you're here this evening, and I'm a member of the New Testament Church, you just want to ask brethren for strength or encouragement, a prayer request, we can certainly honor that. So let's stand together and we'll sing all the dances selected for us.